The audio for the June 28th memorial service at Clinton Street Theater begins with the voice of Barb Green, Dan's partner of 30 years, animal rights and environmental activist, and longtime member of Flying Focus Video Collective. Peace and Justice Works and Portland Cop Watch.
There's been a little change to the program. It says that my tribute was going to be read by Shelley, but I thought it would be strange for her to stand up here and say, Dan was the love of my life. I'd feel a little odd about that. Thank you all so much for coming today to celebrate the life of Dan. It's wonderful to see so many of the people he loved in one spot. Actually, I can't see you, but I know you're out there. I'm sure you've all heard stories about people who died and came back and said that while they were technically dead, they floated up and looked down on what was going around. I'm thinking there's a good chance that Dan is up there right now, looking down on us. I mean, Dan Handelman wouldn't miss a meeting, would he?
Nice line.
So I'd appreciate it if you all would join me in saying hi. We love you, Dan. Hi, Dan. We love you. Thank you so much. I feel very grateful and privileged to have had Dan in my life for 30 years. He was my life partner, my person, my boo, the love of my life. I wasn't sure I'd get that far. I'm glad I did. We shared a love of peace and justice, cats, cemeteries, crossword puzzles, theater and movies, places like the Peculiarium. Hey, he wanted this to be a happy occasion, which reminds me of Dr. Seuss, who said, don't be sad that he's gone, be happy that he was here. Mm-hmm. Actually, I think he was talking about an ice cream cone, but the principle's the same. By the way, we had a practice of picking a word for the day every morning from some cards I made to try and start the day on a positive note. And they're right down there by the toilet paper. And the word for today is be happy. Yes. Dan wanted people to be happy here. He wanted this to be a joyful, not a sad occasion. Dan and I learned a lot from each other. He taught me video editing and how to change the spark plugs on my Toyota and keep it running for 37 years. Not as long as his, but close. I taught him how to take care of cats and cook vegan food. I learned about the prevalence of police abuse from him, and he learned about animal rights from me. He was very, very smart. He was an amazing organizer, a fluent speaker and writer on many complicated subjects. I was in awe of the amount of words that could come out of that man, as I'm sure anybody who's read the People's Police Report can attest to. He could make tax returns for corporations entertaining. Alice Walker said, resistance is the secret of joy, which I ponder. I'm not sure I get it. Dan called his latest car Joy. I don't remember why. If anybody knows, please let me know. Another quote that Dan lived by is this one: may evil beware and may good dress warmly and eat plenty of vegetables. And that, of course, is the superhero, the tick. I have a passage somewhere that I can't find right now from a book co-written by the Dalai Lama. The gist is that research shows when people are happy, they are more accepting of others and more peaceful. His conclusion is that if we want the world to be a better place for everyone, it is our duty to be happy. So I know things are dire out there, but Dan wants us to be happy. Dr. Seuss wants us to be happy. The Dalai Lama says it's our duty to be happy. So I guess maybe we should be happy. So be kind, get in good trouble, and you guys have fun out there.
Next to speak was Matt Handelman, Dan's younger brother by a year. 8 months before Dan died, his older brother, David Handelman, died. You can look for an article in Rolling Stone magazine about David. Here's Matt.
The number of people who have told me how many letters that they saved, typewritten letters that Dan wrote them years and years ago. One of your college buddies, Dan, found one of them and wrote something so touching to me and so right on the nose that I couldn't say it better, so I thought I'd read it to you here. This is something we've discussed a bit, our small college crowd, how Dan was when we first knew him. Not that focused on social change and political issues. An incredibly generous, giving, and kind-hearted person. The ingredients were all there, but not, at that point, as involved as he would later become. I remember with some clarity how Desert Storm affected Dan. He was really worried about a high school friend of his who had been called up to serve. I had never heard him react like that before to something in the news, a geopolitical event. He was really, really rocked by it all. It is the Dan I knew and was honored to know in the most formative years of my life. And yet, it leaves me with an extra bit of sadness. In the decades to follow, he chose a hard path to walk.
Activist, oral historian, and playwright Donna Hayes, whose 17-year-old grandson, Quanis Hayes, was killed by the Portland police in 2017.
I met Dan at a city council meeting. This man didn't know me. I didn't know him. But he sat right beside me and spoke for my family, dealing with police accountability. I thought this was the smartest man alive. The things that rolled out of his mouth was just amazing. And I had to follow him ever since then. I went to some of his protests. I got an email quite often from him. And I read every last one of them. Because to me, this was the smartest man alive. He, just sitting across from me and listening to him speak for my family that he never met a day in his life. He was just awesome, great. Well, we did have some disagreements too. It wasn't always paradise. Him and my nephew had clashes because my nephew had a tendency to support the police in certain matters that Dan didn't agree with. And I didn't get an email, I got a telephone call. And he tell me, your nephew is diluting the whole thing. here I am trying to explain my nephew's side. He didn't want to hear it. And I didn't care, as long as he didn't abandon me. Okay, if he want to step out on my nephew, go right ahead. I do it too. But he had a passion for social justice that I don't think nobody on the planet to this day has. He believed wholeheartedly, deep in his soul, about fighting for what is right. And he was one of the reasons why I stand up and fight. Because I watched this man that didn't know me, spoke for me and my family, and stood up for my family, do it. I had no other choice. I wanted to be like Dan. And I kept wondering who would want to be like Dan. He was great. And what broke my heart was when I got the telephone call. And I felt like my whole world just was ripped the part, but it wasn't, because I got every email, I saved them, that Dan ever sent me. And I can go back and read it and still say, nobody can take his place. I don't think nobody is smart as he is. And I'm so glad and honored that he was my friend. Thank you.
Activist Charlie Michelle Wesley.
So I didn't prepare anything because I was going to read a poem that he was really fond of, that he recently saw a PC had recorded me reciting that poem at a recent protest. I had my corner too, just like Dan does. And then I decided, well, it's not really fitting for this particular setting, so I wrote a poem last night real quick. It just seemed more personal to the relationship that Dan and I had. And for those of you who don't know, I'm Charlie Michelle Wesley. I'm a tribal member of the Confederated Tribes of Grand Ronde, this on our stolen land. And I would just like to say, welcome all my peaceful people, as Dan would say on the corner every Friday. He would refer to us as his peaceful people. And every time we would go march around downtown for 30 minutes, we would stop at the parking structures, especially when the doors were open, and he would encourage us all to shout out, "No war!" because it would echo through the parking structure. And I want to introduce my poem in a way that you get to know our relationship. And so we were very adamant about justice. You know, there just seemed to be everywhere you turn injustices. And we both agree that wherever there's injustice, there's something to do. And I think that's why him and I are both so busy all the time. Fighting injustice seems to be a full-time job. And I just can't imagine ever just stepping back and going, I'm done. You know, just like Dan, he would have never been done with this fight, unfortunately. And we had some other things in common, like duct tape. I don't know if you've seen his gloves, but they're duct taped together. He won't buy new gloves, and you can't even give him new gloves. He wants his duct taped gloves, right? And I use duct tape for everything. In fact, one of my bracelets just broke, and so I mended it with black duct tape. So, and I was thinking about Dan the whole time I was doing that. Every time one of my kitties, because I had three cats that were aging out all in the same year, they passed away, and every time I would share that with him, you know, he had such compassion about that for me and just was very sympathetic. I was kind of surprised that he was a cat person, but he definitely is, and I appreciated that. So many times, like, we met on the Police Accountability Commission, and I just felt I was chosen for lived experience, and I was chosen for my activism, but I felt so very out of place because it seemed like most of the people on the Police Accountability Commission were so knowledgeable of the ins and outs of the injustice system that I call the policing and the way things are run. And I tried to quit several times. And he recognized something in me I didn't recognize in myself. He felt my voice was very, and my lived experience was very valuable to this process of creating a system that would actually hold the police accountable. And I really appreciated that. And I've also seen the side of him that when he couldn't get the entire Police Accountability Commission and our project manager to agree on something, or like the city attorney, et cetera, he would get so frustrated and he would just pound away at that. And he was gonna make these people understand why this is so important. And I could actually see how important it was. His dedication to bringing about justice and police accountability in other areas was very impressive. And I appreciated it as a BIPOC person who is often targeted by the police. And you don't even have to be targeted for doing a crime. It feels like they look at you because of the color of your skin first, and then they'll find a crime. Every time I would do public testimony to city council, I do some pretty radical truth telling up there. And he would always just be, good job, Charlie. Good job. You know, speaking truth to power. Just one other quick thing. I never heard him curse. That was something he was not fond of. Finally, the one time I think he spewed every word he had been holding in for his lifetime was actually when my comrade and friend, Dog, who was shot at Normandale, decided to die with dignity. And he just let it rip. It just tore him up that, you know, this was a white supremacist attack on a Black Lives Matters protest. And so he took two lives, but he has really damaged so many of us who were there emotionally. Yeah, he did have a huge heart. Anyway, here's what I wrote for Dan last night. I named it Because You Were You. Searching for guidance in fear and desperation, not knowing where to turn, I received an invitation. You're accepted to the Police Accountability Commission. I was like, what the? And out of respect for Dan, I won't finish that thought. I anxiously attended the meetings and noticed this very knowledgeable old white guy. Ultimately, through our shared courage, we connected. My severe lived experience and his confidence, no doubt. He repeatedly answered my 5,000 plus questions, and I tried patiently to correct his whiteness. And I'm sure my language hurts his tender ears, definitely challenged his endearing uptightness. But ultimately, we became a valuable team. His expansive police knowledge and quest for peace, and my traumatic life of police violence and justice dream. And finally, I would just like to say, the world is definitely a better place, Dan, because you were you. Thank you.
Hello, I'm Debbie Iona, a longtime volunteer with the League of Women Voters of Portland. I first met Dan in 2000 when I participated in Mayor Katz's work group examining the city's first police oversight system. I was new to the issue, but as time went on, I figured out that Dan would be a helpful resource. That was the start of a 25-year relationship as colleagues and eventually as friends. I came to appreciate Dan's many strengths and how they contributed to his highly effective advocacy on police accountability. He knew policy inside and out. Not only did he know all the intricacies of Portland's system, he also knew other possibly more effective approaches from other jurisdictions. He benefited from an encyclopedic memory. We were regular attendees at police-related meetings. So at times, I saw questions come up that committee members and city staff could not answer. But if someone said, I'll bet Dan knows, he almost always had the answer. He made it a point to connect individually to people involved in the issues, identified what was important to them, and find common ground. He was also an extraordinary organizer and could assemble a group of advocates on a particular issue and turn them out so we made an impact. I worked with him on both police accountability and the city's relationship with the FBI's Joint Terrorism Task Force. There were some hearings over the years where we had an overwhelming turnout, and I credit Dan for reaching out, providing guidance, and persuading us to commit to showing up and stating our case. These strengths were a huge asset during our service on the Police Accountability Commission. The commission was assigned to figure out the details of Portland's new accountability system. We held all our meetings on Zoom, so it was much more challenging to connect with members individually. Dan devoted time and attention to reaching out and building a relationship with each member. His efforts paid off. The commission presented a unanimous recommendation to City Council, and even when the commission had ended its work, Dan worked to maintain the connections we built so we could continue to advocate for the empowered civilian accountability system we had designed. It is a tribute to him that after his death, we came together to join Charlie and at the Friday rally and are contributing to bricks in his memory near his corner at Pioneer Courthouse Square. Dan could also be amusing and subversive. During Mayor Wheeler's term in office, he did not take testimony on reports. That ended our practice of testifying on the JTTF annual reports. One year, Dan came up with the idea of holding a mock hearing in front of City Hall. We set up a table and chairs with name tents for council members and took turns testifying to the empty chairs. The media covered it, and we probably got more attention that way than if Mayor Wheeler had allowed us to speak. Yeah. Yeah. So the next year was COVID, I think. We live streamed the city council meeting that was all virtual then and did like a mystery science theater where there was live commentary. Yeah, so, you know, he was definitely, the theater came out, you know, from time to time. In addition to my gratitude for having had the privilege of working with Dan for over 25 years, we became friends. As many of you know, Dan did not readily share details of his personal life, but over time, he and I started sharing personal stories with one another or speaking informally about the news of the day. Sometimes when he was packing up the office, he'd give me a quick call just to chat. Now, when the phone rings at certain times of the day or evening, my first thought is that it must be Dan. I, along with all of you, I miss him terribly. Thank you.
Videographer, activist, and co-founder of the Flying Focus Video Collective, PC Perry.
So this is stream of consciousness and no prepared speech. One of the things that I think about Dan and his efforts is the myth of Sisyphus. And I once gave him a birthday present that was very small, but I think said pretty much what I saw going on. It was a little rock, probably about that size, very smooth on the outside, probably rolled with water in the tides. But in the center of it, it had a wash where water had hollowed out this hard stone. The water didn't stop. It made an impression. So did Dan. Now let me add some of my own feelings. We have a tyrant trying to work his way into our government, our souls, our lives. And I want you to do something that kind of annoyed me. When Dan died, many people rallied around to say how good he was, how much good he did. I want you to take his work to your hands and make it not a myth, but do something about it. If for no other reason, it's your life that's on the line. So Dan was obsessive, and it's a good thing he was. Tenacious, yeah, but obsessive. Nobody else would have thought that they could reverse the ways of international disorder, change the police. And I'm also reminded of something we had in common, which was when we saw the Rose Parade come to town, and they would bring the boats out in the river and have the fireworks. We knew that people who had actually been in war did not see that as entertainment. PTSD, all over again. Don't let Dan Handelman be a memory that you hold up like Dr. King. Oh, one day we will have, no, make it happen.
My name is Mark Chassie. My brother, James Chassie Jr., was beaten by the Portland police to death on September 17th, 2006. I first learned about what happened to Jim the next evening. It was emotional and disorienting. I couldn't believe it. I soon found stories where the city and the police said Jim was homeless, extremely violent, and urinating in public across from Borough District diners. I knew immediately they were lying. Jim lived in a nearby apartment, and he was painfully shy and a pacifist. These weren't just lies, they were an offense to my brother's entire existence, his humanity, who he was. The propaganda about Jim compounded the grief. It was like the city and the police were defiling my brother's grave after they had just put him in it. The evening's news promised to have more information. There were witnesses. Then a reporter interviews this guy named Dan Handelman from Portland Cop Watch. He talked about other recent police encounters that resembled what he'd heard about Jim. Dan gave me hope that someone else got it. Someone knew that what they were saying about Jim might not be true. I met Dan soon after at my brother's funeral. I was comforted by his sincerity, kindness, and empathy. I was also completely floored by his vast knowledge about policing issues in Portland. As more information came out that contradicted the propaganda, Dan provided more context. He also helped connect us with a community that was upset and outraged about what had happened to Jim, helping to organize a citizens' committee and public events. Dan was an unbelievable help at a horrible time. Speaking about my brother and what happened to him is hard for me, even when it's been almost 19 years. It's incredible that Dan would voluntarily reach out to help people he didn't know in the midst of personal tragedy. Of course, the work took a toll on Dan. He was a very empathetic person. The media and the public knew Dan mainly for his public advocacy, but he was also an amazing person.
And I've had the privilege of knowing him for almost 30 years. And it's always been him showing up to support families of loved ones who've been lost at the hands of police. I will say he was the humblest man I've ever met. He would never show up and go, "I'm Dan Handelman with Portland Cop Watch." He would show up with his red wagon, his protest signs, with his megaphone, and he would show up any place people wanted him to be. To me, that's a true community hero. Someone who doesn't ask what position somebody's in. A community member needs help. A community member needs information. A community member needs to know that the community will stand up and support them. I loved working with Dan. We spent so many hours talking to the Department of Justice around how are we going to fix what's broken in our system. And I can honestly say over 30 years, I had never heard him say, we should just give up and just go home because this is like useless. I would say that sometimes. Why are we still doing this? This is absolutely useless. And he would go, no, we have to keep pushing. We have to keep pushing. I heard someone ask you this a little earlier, and I'm going to ask you on behalf of Dan, please don't ignore the new Police Oversight Commission. Please don't ignore the new city council, right? None of us can fill the role that Dan did, but each of us can take a piece of the work that he worked on and make a commitment that we're not going to let that work die. It is too important, too vital, and too necessary.
You've been listening to audio of the June 28th memorial service for Dan Handelman, co-founder of Peace and Justice Works, Portland Cop Watch, and Flying Focus Video Collective. When we post the show, we will also post a link to the June 29th memorial for Dan at Allen Temple CME Church. The video features comments from the Reverend Dr. Leroy Haynes and from the Reverend Mark Knudsen, along with comments from Ashley Albies and Debbie Iona, with vocals from Marilyn Keller. This has been Desiree Hilliger for the Omaha Variety Hour.